She was separated from her mother and brother, again a 12-year-old, taken to an interrogation room with her American passport in hand. For several hours, Israeli authorities repeatedly asked her questions like, what is your religion? Why are you here? What's your father's and grandfather's name? Do you have any bombs with you? Are you a suicide bomber? They also asked her where she was from several times, to which she replied, America. And the Israeli soldier responded, not here, you're not. There is no scenario where you can look at the history of Israel's treatment of American citizens at its border and say that we can make Israel fit into this program. Period, full stop.
Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm your host, Omar Badar. And today we're talking about an effort by the Biden administration to include Israel in the U.S. visa waiver program. This is a program that eases the travel of foreign citizens into the U.S. by exempting them from any visa requirements. But one of the conditions for countries to qualify for this program is a guarantee of extending the same privileges to Americans visiting that country. But for Palestinian Americans and Arab Americans more broadly, and for critics of Israeli apartheid, the experience of trying to enter Israel or the occupied Palestinian territories is anything but easy. Discrimination, harassment, mistreatment, and sometimes flat-out denial of entry are the norm. You'll remember a couple of years ago, Israel even denied entry to U.S. members of Congress, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, because of their criticism of Israeli policy. Now, one of the leading organizations that has been tracking Israel's mistreatment of Americans at the border is the Arab American Institute. And today, we're joined by AAI Executive Director Maya Berry. Maya, welcome to This is Palestine.
Hey, Omar. Thank you so much for including us.
Of course. Maya, AAI has been dealing with this issue for a very long time. Before we get into what's happening right now with the Biden administration and this current effort to afford Israel even more privileges, can you just give our listeners some context about the broader problem of Israel's mistreatment of American citizens and how far back it goes?
Well, first, Omar, I would start by the key point that you just used to frame the conversation, which is that we're actually talking about Israel's treatment exclusively of American citizens. We know that Israel has a history of discriminating at its border, and that applies to a variety of groups. But for the purposes of this uniquely laser beam focused conversation about Israel's admittance into the visa waiver program, we're talking about U.S. citizens, U.S. passport holders who travel to Israel or Palestinian territories and are either harassed or denied entry because Israel refuses to acknowledge basically their U.S. citizenship. This is happening to Arab Americans, specifically Palestinian Americans, and others who have been advocates for Palestinian human rights. When you say we've been collecting these stories, regrettably, it goes back to our founding in 1985. So for nearly four decades, we have heard from Arab Americans across the country about their treatment at Israel's border and their failure to acknowledge their U.S. citizenship.
Maya, you've laid out that this is an extensive problem that goes back decades. Talk about the complaints that AAI receives. How many of them have you gotten and what do they describe?
Yeah, so a lot over the years, and we've collected them at different times. As you can imagine, in the pre-COVID days, most of those complaints would come in during the traditional summer travel. They range from the most basic, I get stopped, I'm asked where I'm from, I say my state. I might mention I'm from Michigan, for example, but know where you're really from. And you say, I'm born in Michigan. Where is your father from? Where is your mother from? The line of questioning, the treatment, in anticipation of our discussion today, I pulled some, if you don't mind. There's one I just wanted to highlight. They talked about being interrogated for 8 hours, accused of plotting a terrorist attack, repeatedly threatened to be deported or denied entry, ultimately let in, basically saying, hurry up and do it before I change my mind. All of this done in the context of what they talked about being given the special treatment, taken out of line, placed into another holding room where you're there with a group of other Arab Americans. Some are strip search, their suitcases, their address books, their computers literally turned around saying log in so we can view all this. And the part of it, you know, Omar, the key part for us has been that we have actually not been focused on Israel's behavior per se, because we know that each country has a right to control its own borders. And Israel has a dismal human rights record to speak of with regards to its treatment of its own citizens in some regards, and certainly the Palestinians who live under occupation, or the Palestinian citizens of Israel who don't have equal rights. So it's not like we're holding Israel up to a sort of special standard that they have to abide. Our focus has been on addressing our own government and asking our own government to protect our rights in this context. And it's really highly regrettable when these things have come up, because, for example, the State Department has issued travel advisories acknowledging that if you're an Arab American, or specifically a Palestinian American, you're going to have issues. I remember a complaint I looked at where a person was really mistreated and held for a long time, denied their anxiety medication, really sounded like a very traumatic event. And they contacted their senator to seek help after the incident had ended. And they were asked, is this person a Palestinian American? And when she said yes, they said, yeah, they Israel discriminates against Palestinian Americans. So you had, you know, a constituent services staffer in a Senate office fully aware that, yeah, regrettably, yeah, that's what happens. So that's the issue here. And it's regrettably decades old. There are patterns and practices that are been demonstrated without question.
Speaking of this, the State Department itself says, and I'm quoting from their website now, quote, some U.S. citizens of Arab or Muslim heritage, including Palestinian Americans, have experienced significant difficulties and unequal and occasionally hostile treatment at Israel's borders and checkpoints. And it acknowledges that U.S. citizens who are on the Palestinian Population Registry can be denied entry through Israel's airport. So in effect, as you mentioned, Israel is disregarding the American citizenship of some Palestinian Americans, and our government is okay with that. Now, you've had many engagements with the U.S. government and the State Department on this. How do they explain that? Why is this okay?
You know, the answer typically is it's not okay. And that's important. We've had Secretary Madeleine Albright go on record condemning this. We've had then Secretary Condoleezza Rice on record condemning it. As recently as 2014, under the Obama administration, when Jen Psaki at the time was the Department of State spokesperson, she's now the White House, but then for back the Department of State, and I quote, the Department of Homeland Security and State remain concerned with the unequal treatment that Palestinian Americans and other Americans of Middle Eastern origin experience in Israel's border and checkpoints, and reciprocity is the most basic condition of the visa waiver program. So as soon as 2014, there was acknowledgement, this isn't okay. And that's one of the many reasons why Israel doesn't qualify. I'm happy to talk about others, but that's the most basic requirement, is that you have to offer reciprocal privileges to the U.S. citizens, and Israel cannot meet that threshold. The conversation began to shift under the Trump administration. And honestly, I mean, speaking frankly here, it's hard for me to believe that we're having this conversation today, Omar, because I did not expect that we would see a situation where there is consideration for Israel's admittance into this program.
It is certainly aggravating seeing how much ground we're losing on the policy front under Biden, at a time when public opinion is actually shifting in a positive direction and becoming more informed. Now, obviously, U.S. policy has always been deeply problematic on Palestine and Israel. But in this case, it's not just Biden's refusal to create any negative consequences for Israel's bad behavior. He's actually rewarding it. You know, in August, when Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, who, by the way, is even more of a right-wing extremist than Benjamin Netanyahu was, when he visited Biden over the summer, they discussed adding Israel to the visa waiver program, and Biden indicated that he wants to get it done. And just a couple of weeks ago, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said that Israel was at the top of the list now for joining it. Something is deeply broken here, isn't it?
Something is definitely deeply broken here. I think you've given the right timeline, which is that we began to see a change under the Trump administration. And then when Bennett's visit happened, We had then Department of State spokesperson Ned Price talking about the importance of getting Israel into this program in order to benefit both U.S. citizens and Israeli citizens, right? Like, we want to just expedite this super benign program because it's just going to be more convenient for business travel and for tourism. We're talking, after all, we're talking about visas that are less than 90 days. So the banality of all of it is like, it's all fine. We can't even imagine why there's an issue until you start peeling that onion and you start seeing the layers in which there has been a historic discrimination. And I think that the comments from Secretary Mayorkas in particular, I found really very frustrating because this is not Israel being one of the top three countries they're looking at right now. The first the way this process works is DHS consults with the State Department. The Secretary of State has to make the nomination. And literally the first and most important consideration is that they have to offer reciprocal privileges. And there is no scenario where you can look at the history of Israel's treatment of American citizens at its border and say that we can make Israel fit into this program, period, full stop. And then there are other reasons. One of the key principal issues is also that you have, in order to have a non-immigrant visa refusal rate. So for example, the United States has to have a less than 2% refusal rate for visitors from that country. And Israel doesn't have that. The United States refuses Israeli national visas at the rate of roughly 5% or 6%, which isn't particularly high, but it's above the 2% requirement in the law. Mm-hmm. And what's striking about that is that should be okay, done. So you can't give reciprocal treatment to American citizens and you don't meet the refusal rate. So one would argue, why are we having this conversation? And I think that what you have here is political pressure applied to something that they expect to be low-hanging fruit. And it is our job and why we continue to talk about it and why, you know, we've raised it at the highest levels of both State Department and Department of Homeland Security and will continue to do so is to demonstrate this is not a no-brainer. This is in violation of the entire purpose of the program and its statutes.
Maya, where's Congress in all of this? Is there a role for them?
You know, Omar, Congress typically on Israel-Palestine is just not that great, as you know. So in the past, the refusal rate that I mentioned, the way some members of Congress attempted to address this is by actually asking that Israel not be held to that requirement. But I'm happy to say that today, and I do think that there is a newfound understanding of the complexities, or perhaps the simplicity of Israel's human rights record, that there are people that are willing to look at this differently. And you gave the example of the treatment of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. Can you imagine a more high profile example than to say sitting members of Congress were not admitted? And in their case, it was, you know, for the freedom of thought here. They're being denied entry because they're affiliated with an NGO or hold an opinion on the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. That's not how we think here. We have First Amendment rights, and the idea that like another country is going to deny our entry because of those things is simply not acceptable. So there are members of Congress who I think are going to step up and explain why this is not the right move at this time.
You mentioned, Maya, that it's our role to make sure this doesn't get treated like a no-brainer and that we object to it. For those listening who want to do something about this and be a part of an effort to put a stop to it, is there anything that people can or should be doing right now?
Absolutely. And thank you for asking that specifically. There are two things to do. The first is go to our website, which is aiusa.org. And there is a form there that you can fill out that gives us frankly, more data We don't have to use your names if you provide it to us. And when I talk about these stories, and in fact, I want to read one to you before we close out, Omar. We don't have to give the name, but provide your account so that we are able to document this as best as we can. And then the second part is actually, please contact your member of Congress, reach out to them and say, as an American citizen, I deserve equal protection under the law. And when my U.S. passport is not recognized at Israel's border, then I'm not being awarded equal protection. As I've said, our beef on this issue is with our own government. Israel's behavior is in a whole other category. This is about the way the United States has allowed Israel to mistreat us without not only without paying a price for it, but now we're talking about with potentially rewarding them for it.
You also mentioned that you wanted to share another story. Is this of someone who was held by Israel at the border as well?
It is. It's an American citizen of Palestinian descent who is traveling with her mother and brother to Bethlehem. She's 12 years old. She arrives at Ben Gurion Airport in Israel. Her family was held up in customs while guards inspected their bags and questioned them. She was separated from her mother and brother, again, a 12-year-old, taken to an interrogation room with her American passport in hand. For several hours, Israeli authorities repeatedly asked her questions like, "What is your religion? Why are you here? What's your father's and grandfather's name? Do you have any bombs with you? Are you a suicide bomber?" They also asked her where she was from several times, to which she replied, "America." And the Israeli soldier responded, "Not here, you're not." Her mother told the Israeli police that she would contact the U.S. State Department about her experience. And the response back was, "They are not here to help you. We do this to you so you never try to come to Israel again. Go before I change my mind and let you in." So this is, again, a pattern and practice to discourage the travel of Arab Americans, specifically Palestinians, Palestinian Americans who are denied the opportunity to use their U.S. documents. Literally, they force them to travel on Palestinian papers, even though they're U.S. citizens with U.S. passports. It is a pattern and practice. It's discriminatory in nature. It's clear what the intent is, the abuse, the harassment, the mistreatment, and then sometimes outright deportations and denial of entry. And it's just, it's completely unacceptable that our government would consider this treatment to be allowed by allowing Israel into this program.
Honestly, it's beyond unacceptable. We're talking about a country that gets all kinds of privileges and special treatment from the U.S. Unprecedented military funding, unprecedented diplomatic cover, and dozens of vetoes at the U.N. Security Council to shield them from accountability, and for them to turn around and get away with mistreating American citizens in this fashion, and not only not have American support not diminish, but to actually see it grow and reward this behavior is just infuriating. Maya, is there anything else that people should know about this that we haven't talked about yet?
The only final point I would make is that the Israeli press often has a way of spinning things that aren't necessarily the reality of what's happening. So I want to be clear, we're not taking this lightly. We're taking it very seriously, and we're having the conversations with U.S. officials that need to be had to make sure that this does not happen. But I also think there's been a little bit of overstatement about what U.S. officials have committed to and not committed to. So I think as we approach our members of Congress on this, it is not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination, but it's important that we remain vigilant and pushing it back and understanding that the political moves to make it happen are running directly into the wall of what the actual visa waiver program was designed to do and the fact that Israel cannot meet its requirements. I'm not saying this just to sort of leave on a positive note. I'm saying that there's a lot of politics here, and the law is written, and Israel's practices make the burden on them to demonstrate that they can be admitted. So just stay focused and offer us again the data about cases that you're familiar with and bring it to your member of Congress's attention in terms of your opposition to this.
You are just listening to Maya Berry, Executive Director of the Arab American Institute. You can find her on Twitter at @imayaberry, and you can follow the Arab American Institute at @AAIUSA. Maya Berry, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Omar.
Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.